But today I want to cover a topic, since we are going into the holiday season, and it is a time of giving, it's a time of offering, a time of buying special gifts for other individuals or for our children for the Feast of Tabernacles. Though I don't want to look at a particular passage that deals with giving. Let's go to Mark chapter 12. Mark chapter 12 and verse 41. This is an interesting story that takes place, and something that when you hear the story, it's hard to forget because it makes such an impact. But in Mark chapter 12, verse 41, it says, Jesus sat across or against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. So he's just watching, and he's watching what's going on. And there were rich individuals who were throwing a lot into the treasury. And we can think that's a great thing. And it would be if you needed money in the treasury. Verse 42, then there came a poor widow, and she threw two mites in, which make a farthing. And he called unto his disciples, and he said to them, verily I say to you, this woman, this poor widow, has cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For they did cast of their abundance, but she did cast in all that she had and all her living. Now, it's not that these two little mites were solid gold and that they were more valuable in that way. But I want to go through this particular story and break it down verse by verse because it does give us a better picture of what's taking place. Going back to verse 38, and it does give us a little bit of context into what is being discussed here. Verse 38, he said to them in this doctrine, beware of the scribes which love to go in long clothing. They love to go in these long flowing robes. Again, the dress was much different than it is today. Some commentaries state the scribes in the New Testament are referring to the lawyers who were legal jurists of their day, but it also refers to teachers of the law or rabbis, because they not only studied the minutiae of the law, but also explained their interpretation to pupils and all those who were consulting them. So here it says, beware of these scribes. ASV says, beware of those who desire to walk in long robes. And the New English Bible says, those who love to walk up and down. You know, they go back and forth. It's almost like walking the catwalk for individuals going out. And I want to be seen. I want you to see what I have, what I'm wearing. Those who love to walk up and down. The parallel New Testament in Greek and English states, those who wishing in robes to walk about. They want to walk about in robes so they can draw attention to themselves. So they're show-offs. Now we get a better picture of the attitude of what Christ is talking about here from looking at another commentary. And again, these are just references to what is very likely taking place because of what was happening in the day. Barnes' note states, he cautions people to take heed of the suffering themselves to be imposed upon by the scribes and being infected with their pride and hypocrisy. Now this is gets to the heart of the matter. Pride and hypocrisy. He said to them in this doctrine, beware of the scribes. Stand on your guard that you neither imbibe in their particular options nor the opinions of the people concerning them. The charge is long drawn up and against them in this parallel. He says they affect to appear very great. Their purpose is to appear great, to appear noble, to appear as, oh wow, that's somebody who's really intelligent because now they're wearing this robe. They're like those who are judges. They're like those who are lawyers. They're like those scribes. For they go in long clothing with vestures down to their feet, and those they walk about the street as princes, judges, or gentlemen of the long robe. You know, if somebody walked in today in a long robe, it would probably draw attention too, because we'd be going, why is that man wearing a long robe down to his feet? But at that time, it was known as being something that individuals were priding themselves on. So it says, their going in such clothing was not sinful, but they're loving to go in it, and they're priding themselves in it, valuing themselves on that, and commanding respect by it, and saying in their long clothes, as Saul did to Samuel, honor me now before this people. And it was a product of pride. Christ would have his disciples go with their loins girt. He said, "Girt your loins, bring them up, tighten them, and be ready." So we see the attitude of pride as we get into the story of giving, the story of these individuals who were throwing money in. And this is the context as we lead into it. But the whole premise of the story that we're looking at is attitude. And he's not just talking about what the money is worth, but he's talking about attitudes and how the attitude was affected and how it affected other individuals. So we're talking about pride versus humility, and it is also a story that shows commitment. It's not just whether she was humble, and she was. She threw in the last bit of what she had. She wasn't saying, "Everybody look as I throw in my last two bits." She just came up and dropped it in. But he was watching and knew what was going on. But it is an attitude of commitment as well. And we'll see why when we go through this story. Now, ending in verse 38, it says, "They love salutations in the marketplaces." The American translation of the New Testament puts it this way: they love to be saluted with respect in the public places. I want the attention. I want the direction of individuals to be looking at me. Give me the recognition that I deserve. Keep your place here. We're going to go to Luke chapter 20, just as a reference. Luke chapter 20 and verse 45. Luke 20 and verse 45. It said, "Then in the hearing of all the people, he said to his disciples, 'Beware of the scribes who desire to go around in long robes. They love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogue, the best places at the feast. They devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation.'" He said they're going to be condemned for what they're doing. Now Barnes states of this here, "They aim to advance themselves. They coveted applause." They wanted attention and they wanted recognition. They wanted to be saluted. He said they coveted applause and they were fond of it. They loved salutations in the marketplaces and the chief seats in the synagogues and the utmost rooms at the feast. And it pleased their fancy to have these things given to them. They thought it expressed value that individuals had for them and those who knew them, and gained respect of those who did not. Well, I don't know who that is, but everybody's respecting him, so I have respect for this person. And so they were looking at this particular way of life and the way individuals were acting and getting into this idea. And so he says you need to avoid that. But they wanted recognition for who they were. And that goes back to pride. Let's go to Psalm chapter 10 and verse 2. I'm going to mention a few verses here as we look at this. And these are references since it is a more of a Bible study format. I want to go through some particular verses that tie in with the attitude that's going on here. Psalm chapter 10 and verse 2. "The wicked in his pride persecutes the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined." He's saying let them get caught up in their own devices. If they're trying to steal money from the poor, if they're trying to put the poor down, let them be caught up in what they're imagining to do. But they persecute the poor. As it's saying here, they were stealing widows' houses. Proverbs chapter 8. Proverbs chapter 8. We're going to look at a few in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13. "The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogancy, and the evil way and their forward mouth do I hate." He hates evil, he hates pride and arrogancy, which is what we're reading about here in the scribes. So he says, "I hate that attitude." God despises seeing that attitude of individuals who are trying to draw attention to themselves. A few chapters over, Proverbs 11, verse 2. He says, "When pride comes, then comes shame, but with the lowly is wisdom." With those who humble themselves, he said, there's wisdom that's going to come with that. Another one you're probably familiar with is Proverbs 16 and verse 8, or verse 18 rather. Proverbs 16 and verse 18. "Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall." Usually if you see somebody, it's soaking in all of the attention of individuals, very proud individual, Pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. I have watched in individuals that thought this isn't going to last too long because it's so obvious and so apparent, and then something happens and it just deflates the bubble. They become known. The individuals see what they're like and what their attitude is, and it begins to diminish the very opposite effect of what they were seeking. One last one in Proverbs 29, verse 23. Proverbs 29, verse 23. He says, a man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Now, this poor widow who threw these mites in to the offering was humbling herself. She didn't go there in pride. She didn't try to draw attention saying, everybody look, this is my last two bits. Look at what I'm giving to the church. I'm giving everything I have. She just humbly went up and gave it. But he says he will uphold and honor the humble in spirit. And we're going to read, as we see in this story, that that's exactly what takes place. So as we look at the story of the widow's mite, we're going to see a stark contrast to the attitudes that we see here. The difference between pride and humility. The difference between seeking glory and being haughty and having a humble attitude, and one, as she expresses, is a giving attitude. Philippians 2:3 says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. And that's the way these scribes were working, in vainglory. But he says, in lowliness of mind, let each one esteem others better than themselves. He said, esteem others, but do it in lowliness of mind. So I want to go back to Mark chapter 12, and we'll continue in this story now that we have a background of what just took place and how he was addressing the scribes and their issue of pride. Mark chapter 12 and verse 40. He says, which they devour widows' houses. Now you think of devouring, but most of the time we think of we're eating something. We're going to devour a meal. We're going to take in something. But he's just saying they're consuming. They're taking in widows' homes. Moffat says they prey upon the properties of the widows. Have you ever seen that happen in the church? I have. I've been in the church for over 45 years, and I've seen individuals who preyed on the property of church. If somebody was older and having health problems, trying to get in, trying to be their next best friend, trying to have property put in to their name before somebody dies. And again, it's a very sad thing to see. Barnes says, they aim to enrich themselves. They devour widows' houses and make themselves masters of their estate by trick or other. Again, just as what I was talking about, what I have seen in the modern church today. Sneaking in, pretending, putting on pretenses to become a best friend or a caregiver, simply to take over property. But it says it was to screen themselves from suspicion or dishonesty, and they put on the mask of piety, that they might not be known or thought of as bad or the worst, and they were studious to appear as good. So here, they were not out to give, but they were out to receive. The opposite of her attitude. They were out to take somebody's property, not the attitude that this woman had of giving. They had the opposite, the attitude of get. As Mr. Armstrong used to say, there's two ways of life, give and get. And they were focused on getting. Verse 40, it says, and for pretenses, or for outward showing, they make long prayers that they shall receive, and he says, these shall receive greater damnation. One translation, the WEY translation, says that they make their wickedness, or they mask their wickedness, rather, by making long prayers. So they gave these long prayers and would give them in public so people would say, well, they can't be taking that widow's home. Look at the long prayers they're giving. Look how religious and how righteous this person is, because he just goes on and on in prayer. Barnes says, they affect to appear very good, for they pray and they make long prayers as if they were intimate in heaven, and they have a great deal of business there. Like, oh, I've got so much going on with God, I just have to have these long prayers because I've got to take care of all these things in my prayer with God. And so they prayed long, and some think that intimacy, as they prayed, not for themselves, but they prayed for others, wherein they would give this appearance that, well, I'm praying for other people. And they did it for pretense. that they might seem to love prayer, and not only for God's sake, but hereby pretending to glorify and for their neighbor's sake and by those that they seem to be giving service to. Pride is concerned with what do I look like? And usually one sin leads to another sin, leads to another, and pride was leading to these individuals putting up a front of hypocrisy and trying to appear like something they're not. And again, God condemned that type of attitude and said it was wrong. In verse 40, he says, they shall receive greater damnation. They're going to be condemned for that type of attitude and what they're doing, trying to appear as one thing but being another. The strong said of this damnation, that word means judgment or condemnation. So they're going to receive greater judgment or condemnation. It was an attitude that the scribes had, but I want to see what's looking at what happens next in verse 41. So it says, Jesus sat over against, meaning directly opposite. He's sitting right across from the treasury. And it says, he beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. It didn't say he just watched them cast money in, but how they cast money in. And many were rich, and they cast in much. So it says Christ watched, and that means gazed upon or studied. That's the words that are in the original. He studied how people were going throwing their money in. And he took the time to study what was going on around him, meaning he was very discerning, and watched. Now, if you're talking and trying to draw attention to yourself, it's hard to try to discern what's going on around you because you're focused on getting this attention for yourself. But he used that type of discernment, and he was very shrewd many times in how he dealt with situations. Now, sometimes we learn a lot just by sitting and watching and listening. But this was not about how much a person threw in. It says he watched how they threw their money in. And that kind of gives us a lead into something I want to cover here. And again, something why this particular story is something I remember and something that I enjoy going through and reading. The parallel New Testament Greek and English says, he beheld how the crowd put copper money into the treasury. How they put their money in. Not just how much, but actually how they did it. And it still goes along the same lines of pride. Money from Strong's, it says, perhaps, though it is a hollowing out of a vessel made of metal, made of copper, or the substance in which the coins were also made of, where it would make a noise when individuals would put their offering in. It'd be like us saying, I want everybody to give coins in the offering on the Feast of Trumpets, and we've got this big copper plate we're going to pass by, and so everybody, ching, you know, make their noise as they pass. So everybody knows, oh, they're donating, they're giving. So they had this copper vessel that would receive. Now, here's a title that you don't hear very often, a zinger giver. If you've ever heard of a zinger giver, it said that this treasury, it was a trumpet-type treasury box that people would throw coins into, and the coins would then go down this trumpet-shaped copper and into the box. So it wasn't a matter of just come up and gently slide your coins down and try not to make too much noise. The copper was there for a reason, to make noise. So it would draw others over to, somebody's making a donation or a gift. I need to go over and put mine in as well. So they would begin to put it into this copper vessel. It says many would try to make noise with their coins, and so others would hear as they went into the box, and then they were called zinger givers because it would make the zinging noise. Because not only did they just drop it in and a clang, but they would kind of put it in and it would spin around this trumpet-shaped bowl going into the box. And so it would spin around. And I don't know if you've ever seen sometimes at the mall, you see this big round circle and it's concave and you put a quarter in and it rolls all the way around and you just watch it keep rolling and rolling and rolling until it gets faster and faster. And you hear the noise get faster and faster and then it drops in. It's a pretty nice way for them all to make money. All the kids want to watch their quarter go around, and people just keep dropping money in to watch their money go down the drain. But it's a fun way to watch it because of the noise it makes and because watching the money go around. Well, it's very similar with this, except it was copper, so it made a lot more noise. Barnes Noble says, the treasury, this was the court of women, and it says the court where they fixed a number of places or coffers where these large open-mouthed trumpet-shaped design was there for the purpose of receiving the offerings of the people, and the money that was contributed It was devoted to the service of the temple, to incense and sacrifices, etc. So we have some who like to be seen in their robes, and they were individuals, even as they were giving their offering, like to be heard. Still a way of drawing attention to themselves. Now in Matthew chapter 6, verse 2, 5, and 16, he mentioned several times, they have their reward. If they wanted attention, they got it. That's all they're going to get. They're not going to get a pat on the back for being such a great contributor, or, wow, you give so much money to the church, we're going to give you recognition. He said, no, when individuals do that for attention, they have their reward. It's all about them, and again, deals with an attitude. Now, God tells us when we give an offering, he says, I love a cheerful giver. Now, it doesn't mean when the basket's passed, we turn around and smile great big and show how great or how happy we are, wave the envelope and put it in. No, he loves a cheerful giver, one who is excited to give, one who wants to give, but they just quietly put it in the basket and say, I gave what I should to God. I've thought about it. I've put my thoughts into what the offering's going to be, and I'm happy to give the offering. He wants somebody who has a humble attitude, not like that, not like somebody who's trying to get their attention. So verse 42, it says, there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites. Other translations say lepta, which make a farthing or a quadrans. So we see, number one, the widow was poor. This is a woman who didn't have a whole lot. Now, some are called paupers or beggars, but she was poor. She threw in the mites, or a lepta, taken from the word lepton, the smallest coin in the Greek world. Smallest coin. Now today, people, you see pennies all over the streets. People don't pick those up anymore. For the United States, the penny's the smallest coin we have. But here was the smallest coin in the Greek world, equal to 1/128th of a day's pay. 1/128th. Clark commentary says this brass money, probably a species of small brass coin, was called a pruta among the Jews, two of which make a farthing, 24 make an Italian aserius, and aserius is a 24th part of a silver penny. So we call this mite, and from the French, miette, or miette, which signifies a crumb or a very small morsel. That's considered a very small amount of money. So this 1/128th of a day's wages, comparably, if we say, okay, the average wage is $14 an hour, her offering would have been about $1.50 or $1.75. That's how much she put in. That's a very, very small amount. Now, verse 43, he called unto him his disciples, and he said to them, as he had sat there and watched all of this, that poor widow has cast more in than all they that have cast into the treasury. He said, her little two pieces, these little two morsels, or what they're the smallest amount that you could contribute, she has cast in more than all of they that cast in. Tells us there's something very special about her offering. She cast in more because of her attitude. I know many in tithing, and realizing that everything belongs to God. These individuals tithe, and the one I'm thinking of particular, I've mentioned here before, tithe for 40 years. And when they said, you don't have to tithe any longer, said, I never liked tithing anyway, and was happy that tithing was gone. And I thought, tithing for 40 years with a wrong attitude, that had to be very difficult to do. To just focus every time going, I hate giving this money, but here I go. Again, it was an attitude, and sadly, that individual is no longer around. But what was the attitude here? The giving of money is and means little to God, who owns everything, who, he says, I'm the possessor of heaven and earth. And even when we give our offering, it's not, well, fortunately, my offering's going in because if we didn't have this offering, the work wouldn't be done. Well, God will have the work done. He said he can raise up stones to do his work. But he wants an attitude behind it, and we often talk about that when an offering is given. So he says he owns everything. In fact, Exodus 19:5 says, therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, keep my covenant, then you shall be a particular treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. God says, I own it all. We're only giving back when we give to God. And God says, all of the earth is mine. And here she's giving, not just, I'm going to give a donation, but it says she gave all she had. But it is God's to deal with as he pleases. Now, we also see here that just because we're doing what we're told doesn't mean we're doing it right. It's another lesson that could be learned from this. There was an offering, and individuals were to give offerings, especially on the holy days. But just because we're told to give an offering and we give an offering, or just because God says we tithe and, oh, I tithe for 40 years, doesn't mean you're doing it right. If it's done out of hypocrisy, if it's done to be seen, if it's done out of, I'm obliged to do it. I have to do it. God told me I have to do it, even though I hate it. You can do something that you should, but it doesn't mean you're doing it right. Why do we do what we do? And how do we look at our giving? It's not just doing it that matters. 1 Corinthians 13 says, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, if I do not have love, it profits me nothing. All those things that we read in 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, says if I don't have the right attitude, if I don't have love and concern, if I don't have humility, it's not going to profit me anything. Now, verse 44, he says, for all of they did cast in of their abundance. They had a lot, and so they gave comparably a lot. Moffat's version says, they have all put in a contribution out of their surplus. Now, some who are wealthy and have a lot have surplus, and they go, well, it's not costing me a lot to do this. You know, this widow's only putting in $1.50. I'm going to put in $300. But if it's out of their surplus, and it's not, it barely makes a dent in my pocket. This is what is being said here. It says, they cast in of their abundance. They gave something that wouldn't set them back. It wasn't of significance to them to give. But she, of her want, did cast in all that she had, even all of her living. It's the last two coins, even though they were small, the last two coins of what she owned. And she threw it in. She said, I want to give everything that I have. And again, it shows here when it says of her want, means out of her poverty, out of her want and need for finances. Out of her poverty, she threw in what she had. Threw in all that she possessed, and she gave all that she had to live on. And what she donated and what she gave was basically equal to 12 minutes of a person's wages. That's all she had. She was destitute. And that's why it says a poor widow, not just poor. I mean, she was at her very end. And again, it may only have been $1.50 in comparison to today's wages, but it was everything. And that's why I say it's not just a matter of the attitude of how she gave or what she gave, and it was a right attitude, but it also showed her commitment, that I'm willing to give everything I have because I know what I'm committing it to. But she gave all that she had. Now, this contrast is very different from the first part of the story, from the attitude of pride and wearing robes and even in the casting it of money, making the noise, the zinger givers, trying to draw attention to themselves, to this poor widow. And that's why Christ said she threw in more than all the rest, because she threw in an offering of her heart, her attitude. She was a poor widow. They were rich. She was uneducated in the law, and they were well educated. She was a woman. They were men. There's a lot of things contrasted here. Now let's look at their attitude back in Mark chapter 11 and verse 27. Mark 11, verse 27. And they come again to Jerusalem, and as he was walking in the temple, there came to him chief priests and scribes and the elders. Now, these are the same types of individuals that are the ones who like to walk around. And they said to him, by what authority do you do these things, and who gave you this authority to do these things? They're like, who do you think you are? You're coming here, you're speaking, you're healing. Who gave you the authority to do these things? And again, Christ being discerning and I love the way sometimes that he deals with particular situations such as this. They are asking, who are you to be preaching on our turf? This is our area. You're stealing our thunder. So Mark 11, verse 29, Jesus said, and he answered to them, I will also ask you one question, and answer me, and I will tell you what authority I do these things. He said, if you can answer my question, I'll answer your question. He said, the baptism of John, was it from heaven or men? Answer me. They reasoned with themselves, saying, well, if we say it's from heaven, he will say, then why did you not believe me? I'm telling you, I do these things from heaven. But if we say it's of men, they feared the people, for all the people counted John as a prophet indeed. If we say it's from men, people are going to say, oh, they don't think John was a prophet from God. If we say it's from heaven, then we have to admit, then he is also a prophet. So how are we going to answer this? How are we going to look if we give the wrong answer? They're still thinking about, how are people going to view me? Verse 33, they answered and said to Jesus, we cannot tell. We're not going to tell you. Jesus answered and said to them, neither do I tell you what authority I do these things. I love the answer, the way he turns things around, puts it right back into their court, and they couldn't do anything with it. Love the comebacks that he has in many of the situations where they tried to catch him. So the priests, the scribes, and the elders were worried about how they would look to the people. And throughout the next chapter, Christ gives the parable of how he would be treated coming up in the future, his future. But he talks about giving to Caesar what is Caesar and to God what is God's. He said there is a right time to give things, and you have to give to the government what the government is requiring, but to give to God what God also says needs to be given. He is presenting questions by the priests. He's given questions that try to trick him, but also trying to make individuals look good. And their whole purpose in addressing him many of the times was to, let's get the eyes back on us from the people. He's drawing attention from individuals, and we want to get that attention back. So we see a contrast in those attitudes, how one gives to God. And he's not just watching about the amounts. The amount wasn't important. It was that she gave everything she had. And she gave it from the heart. She gave it with the right attitude. And God says he loves a cheerful giver. When we give the offering, we go through the verses where God says, not one who gives out of necessity. Oh, I know it's a holy day again. I've got to come up with an offering. And I don't think individuals do that or should. It's not one of vanity. It's not one of, well, I'm financially loaded, so doesn't bother me to give an offering. It's one who gives an offering with the right attitude. And that attitude is what makes all the difference. And the attitude is what is being discussed in this particular story. So I want to go back to the comparison. One particular commentary states, wherein as they evidenced no faith, they actually stole money from God and from men. And it says, she evidenced great faith because she's throwing in, after this, I throw it in, I have nothing. And she's going to trust in God. She showed great faith and gave out of her extreme poverty everything she had. Now, I'm not suggesting next week at the Feast of Trumpets you throw in everything you have. That's not wise. Now, God wants us to use wisdom. But we should, and we're told to think about our offering in advance. Think about how we're going to give it. And think about the attitude behind it and why we're giving in an offering. And this story giving goes much more than just what she gave and how she gave, but it talks about attitude, talks about giving, and it is a sign of commitment. What is our attitude in how we give? In our tithes, in our offerings, in our giving of our service, with the giving of ourselves, in all the things that we do, what is our attitude in giving? As we approach the holiday season and the offerings that are going to be given, remember the widow's mite and the lessons that are here of sincere and proper giving to God.